Blog Talk Radio.
You are now tuned in to the Soul Sessions Radio Show, right here on the Flavor News Radio Network and Soul City Radio. My name is Dwayne Alston, and as always, I am your host. I got a good show lined up for you. Tonight's guest is producer, frontman, singer-songwriter, goes by the name of Paris Tune. If that name sounds familiar to you, that is because he is Paris Tune of Paris Tune featuring Mother's Favorite Child. And he'll be in the studio tonight to talk about their latest release, Baptism by Fire, as well as what's coming over the horizon. So make sure you're here at the 10:30 mark for that. And in the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and get this music started for you. I'm going to kick things off with a little Anthony Hamilton. This is from his... I got a little sinus headache, so forgive me if I sound a little awkward tonight. This is from his release entitled Point of It All, and this is Hard to Breathe, which is pretty apropos because it's pretty hard for me to breathe right now, too. But anyway, kick back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Next to you, I guess I got caught up in you.
That's strong. broken promises, heartaches, lost love, and every mistake has made the man you see in me. So love, love, take my hand, take my heart, take my soul, and keep complete control. If that's the key to being happy, see, then be here with you. So lady, take all of me, yeah. Take my heart as the first center we were meant to be. So lady, take all of me. It did not go with the center. In this lonely world, there's no home, there's no bed. Here all alone are memories of the old me.
Love,
love, here I am, here I stand before you as a changed man. If you will follow, I will lead.
Life filled with so much rain. had, treating me so shady. Was it something I said, something I did? Far away, well, where we should be. Oh, was I surprised when I saw the love leave your eyes? Can we try this over? Even like this, can we maybe try this over?
Over,
try it till we get it just right. Yeah, just baby, I'm not that crazy. There's something wrong here lately. So I'm wondering if there's something we missed. Haven't even kissed. Started off with good time. Now I just don't know where your heart lies. But I'm willing to try one time. If we can try this over. Just right, oh, over, yeah.
And we try this
over. Sure that we don't make the same mistake. Oh, like we've seen before.
I haven't seen you.
Yeah, it's something about that tune I really like. That was Douglas Adams with Just Like This. Before that, we had Daryl Strode's and Over and Over. My brother from D.C., Carter Anderson, with Left in the Dark off of his I'm Not the Last Gentleman CD, which is very nice. You guys should check that out if you are in the D.C. area. I actually have a couple copies still left in the Soul City Radio vault, and I could give them away, you know. I just need some incentive. But either way, before that, we had Brian Owens with I Just Want to Feel All Right. You know, that song in particular, like I was walking to the store the other day, and, you know, and it's something about that song. You're like, listening to it, maybe it was just that particular day, but listening to that song as I was walking, it made me feel like I was in like a music video or something, just seeing my neighborhood and, you know, just listening to the words of the song. It was quite interesting. Before that, though, we had Brad Marquis with All of Me, Atlantic Star with Let's Get Closer, a little something out of the time capsule, and again, we led things off with Anthony Hamilton off of the Point of It All CD. Track was entitled Hard to Breathe. My guest Paris Tune hasn't called in yet, still waiting for that, and as soon as he gets on the line, we'll go ahead and get that interview started. But in the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and get back to some music. And we'll kick off this. I'm sorry. Like I said, I have a sinus cold today, so I'm feeling kind of crazy. So let me rewind that. I'm going to kick off this next set with a little Eric Robeson. This is Fall, and you are tuned in to Soul Sessions. Thank you.
de te connaître, déjà même si on ne s'est jamais parlé. Allez, sois pas timide, je t'attends.
From afar, you walked into my place. Could it be you're here for me? You settle comfortably, watching and waiting. Could it be you're here for me? Let me sing you a tune. Another man, are you my angel man? Could it be you're here for me?
Like traffic in heat, or is it already Monday? scent of you still sit like chocolate on my tongue, hungry for more of you again. Ooh, I must be going crazy. It was easy, you started over again. I don't even feel like making up right now,
even though it's the best part.
Could you just sit still and enjoy the moment? Forget that time is asking all the things we cannot answer. But ooh, did you just leave again?
Yo.
that was Kyra Simone with Moments. Before that, we had DC's own Kia Bennett with Lifetime off of her, I'll just carry on. Before that, we had Jonas with Balance on the End off of his CD entitled We Are In This Together. Little known fact that you may not know about that CD, if you are aware of who Jonas is, what you may not know is that he recorded that whole CD in his house. And if you ever get a chance to see the physical CD, look at the insert and you will see pictures of him and his band recording that CD from his house. He has a recording studio in his house, and he did that. And mainly because, you know, he really embodies the spirit of being an independent artist. Like, you know, he does it all from concept to completion on his own. And I admire that about him. I admire that in any artist. You know, that's really, you know, putting it down for the cause. So I appreciate that. Before that, we have Baltimore's own Gigi Allen with Kismet, which is a very, very lovely song. I love the little French that she speaks at the beginning. And we let that set off with Eric Robeson with Fall. I apologize to the listeners that were expecting to hear the interview with Paris Toon tonight, but apparently he wasn't able to call in. I hope it's nothing serious. Hope he's all right. And I'll get in touch with him, and hopefully we can reschedule that thing. But it's all good. The show must go on. I'm probably going to cut it short tonight, because I'm not feeling that hot, and I'm probably just going to end up going to bed. But I will, wait, hold up. I think we may be in luck. Let me see who this is on the line. You are tuned in to Soul Sessions Radio.
This is Paris Toon calling in.
Oh, brother, I thought something happened to you.
Yeah, I lost my phone. I had to go back to the studio and grab it.
Oh, yeah, I'm glad it wasn't anything serious. I was just saying that I hope it wasn't anything serious.
No, it was just me trying to rush to get home and got in the car, left, and realized I didn't grab my phone. And when I grabbed it, I had to charge it in the car, so I just got home.
I can dig it. Well, I definitely thank you for going out of your way to hang out with me on the show tonight.
No problem. I'm actually excited to be on the show, and sorry for getting back to you late.
No problem.
So, how are things going on the show?
Oh, it's pretty smooth so far. I just ran through the second set of music. I was just about to go into the third set when you called, so it is all good.
We have a different time. A time here too. I don't know if Arizona time doesn't change, but y'all's time changes on the East Coast.
Really? So what time is it there?
What? It's 9 o'clock here.
Huh?
Because you guys are 2 hours away. Our time never changes, but you guys, West Coast and East Coast changes for us.
Wow! I didn't know that. So your time doesn't change for you at all.
No, not at all.
Mm-mm. Wow.
No, not at all.
I wonder what that means.
It means that time means absolutely nothing.
That's true. That is true. I mean, but that's interesting. I mean, I'm sure they taught that in school, but I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it's mountain time, I think is what it is. Well, I don't know, it's just Arizona, our time doesn't change at all.
That's crazy. Yeah, but like you said, though, that just means time is really irrelevant.
It really is. There's no such thing as forever.
Exactly. All right. While I'm getting the tracks queued up, I want to ask you, and I ask this of all my guests, when did you know that this was what you wanted to do with your life?
First time I saw Purple Rain. I was writing, but I didn't think that I wanted to be a musician. Uh-huh. So I basically saw Purple Rain and decided that, you know, that was when I wanted to do music. And, you know, I was I had a neighbor that was in love with Prince, and I wasn't really into Prince. She showed me a record of Vanity 6, and I just fell in love with Vanity. I was young.
Of course.
And then she told me that they were dating or something like that, and I was like, well, if this is what you do to get someone like Vanity, then I'm all for it. And that was that was the beginning of me wanting to get into music.
Oh,
and then and then I heard them slow songs, and girls was, you know, loving those slow songs. So that's how it started.
Shoot, I hear that. That's probably the most honest answer I've ever heard.
It's the truth.
Yeah, I can dig it, you know, because I usually get the, you know, and then not taking away from all the other answers I've ever received, but you can tell, like, you know, like there's the altruistic answer that I get, but that was really to the point.
Yeah, well, that's what it was, and, you know, when you write, you know, love letters or poems to girls, and, you know, you get that attention back that the regular guys weren't getting, so it's kind of like, you know. And then, you know, back in the 80s, you know, it was all about being mysterious and strange a little bit. So, you know, Prince was that. And so, and then I really got into his music and his lyrics. And then, that was the beginning of me wanting to be into music. And then hip-hop came about for me. And then that's when it happened, was with hip-hop, for, you know, really. As far as the musical, getting in the business of it, you know, getting in the game, it was hip-hop.
Yeah, I can dig that. I can dig that for real. That's probably when a lot of artists, especially, you know, if you are an artist that came around after like 87, I can't imagine that you don't have a hip hop influence somewhere, even if you know, even if your music is far from hip hop.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, hip hop has pretty much been the most influential music, I think, you know, probably in the last 20 years, I would assume it would be hip hop, you know. But, you know, hip hop for me, you know, there's a difference coming from the East Coast. There's a difference between hip hop and rap, you know. And so, you know, when I was younger, you know, hearing Rakim for the first time and hearing KRS-One, it was like it just changed the game. And then on the West Coast, when NWA dropped and Ice-T, you know, I was real young. It changed the game to me of what, you know, lyricist and where hip hop was going to go, you know, with lyrics. And then, you know, with Molly Mall and Pete Rock and Premier, musically things just start to get better and better and better. And then, I don't know what the hell happened, but something happened and it reverted back to, you know, nothing. And so,
you know,
I'm not...
I have an answer that I could say, but every time I tell people this, like, they tend to get upset, and, you know, and to me, like, that's just where I see it, and I don't mean to insult anyone when I say this, but this, like I said, this is just how I see it, but honestly, I think it started happening when Master P came out.
I would even say it happened when Too Short came out.
But you know what, though? Like, I listened to Too Short, and even though his subject matter was pretty much not something I felt, I still found lyricism in what he was saying. You know, it took a little bit because of his style, but
right.
There is lyricism there. But honestly, you know, when I listen to Master P, like, I honestly hear someone that just decided that they were going to make money off of this. Like he really didn't have any type of musical inclination before that.
Yeah, I definitely believe, listening to, there are certain, you know, we'll call them rappers that were absolutely horrible. Like, say, for instance, a Vanilla Ice, right? But he believed he was good. Like,
right.
He truly believed that he was going to be an MC and was an MC, and, you know, he believed it, and he fell into the whole pop thing, and the machine, you know, pushed him, but we all knew what that was. Like, we knew that, that him rapping wasn't going to change the game of hip-hop for our community, you know what I mean? But when you have, you know, someone like a Master P, you know, and then you know, Def Jam, they built hip-hop, and then they also, you know, shut it down, I believe, you know. And so I look at all the last MCs on Def Jam, you know, Redman and, you know, some of the cats off of Def Jam, and, you know, they weren't selling enough units, so they were dropped. But the culture of hip-hop has pretty much been ignored through the industry now, you know. So it's kind of like they kind of raped it and got what they needed to get from it, and then they created their own, you know, clone of whatever and watered it down, and they lost the realness, you know, and the organic, you know, culture of hip-hop. And, you know, like, for me, I can't listen to Lil Wayne. I mean, I just don't feel it. I understand people, he sells lots of records, and people love it and all that other stuff. But for me, you know, when you, it's kind of like, I guess, you know, if you grew up with Muhammad Ali or Mike Tyson, and there's no heavyweight champion anymore, everybody's, you know, watching UFC, so it's a whole different culture. And so for me, you know, when I think about hip-hop, I'm thinking about, you know, Rakim. You know, I'm thinking about Big Daddy Kane. You know, and so I look back and I say, you know, there are cats now that have some serious lyrics and have serious flow. But if you look at the percentage of what those guys did to change the game and how they all had their own unique style and their own unique brand before branding was even a big thing, these cats are not doing anything unique. They're not doing anything to take anything to a whole nother level. I think Eminem was probably the last one to really, you know, show that he could take hip-hop and also make it popular, and people weren't going to mess with him. He's a, to me, like, Eminem is a true MC. I don't even have any Eminem records, but I know he's a true MC. And
go ahead.
I was saying, and if any MC wants to basically say, you know, Eminem, you know, not this, you know, battle him. Because to me, when I grew up, being an MC was about battling, you know. And if you look at, you know, the one line is the comical, you know, lines that Big Daddy Kane would say, or the daggers that Rakim would say in his metaphors, I'm not really hearing that, and then it working with the popular culture. And it's sad, because it's almost as if, like, it's like the popular culture has become ignorant, you know? It's like, you know, hip-hop was, you know, it was like a religion almost, you know, growing up. And I took it, and a lot of us took it to wherever it was that we went, whether it was business, whether it was getting into R&B and neo soul. We tried to stay true to what it was that we, you know, what we did. And I just feel like when the torches got passed, people didn't do the right thing with it, you know. Yeah, I believe that also with neo soul. You know, I don't believe that a lot of the neo soul artists or R&B soul artists have stepped up the game. I think they're still trying too hard to sound like Erykah Badu, Jill Scott, even the production. You know, everybody's still using the same sounds. And so I just feel like, you know, if you look at people like Donny Hathaway and Stevie Wonder, they were innovators. And if all you try to do is copy, but yet the people that you say that your influences are the innovators, then what does that make you? It doesn't really, they didn't influence you enough, or you didn't use your artwork and work ethic enough to try to be another innovator. You just, you know, copying. And don't get me wrong, there's some great artists out there, and there's some great songs, but there seems to be a ceiling for neo soul right now. It's like, you know, if we have to wait for Maxwell and D'Angelo to come up with records to keep the genre alive, there's a problem. And the problem to me is not the recording industry. The problem is the artist not truly being, you know, real artist and really trying to push to do something new and different lyrically or musically. Or, you know, artistically, I'm not really seeing it that much. There are some, but I'm not seeing it that much.
I can understand that. Well, let me ask you, going from there, because, you know, I've heard that said often, and it's always made me wonder, because I guess my view with neo soul in particular is, well, before I go into that, I'll just say this, like, over, I guess, the past couple of years, I've found myself not really liking to classify the music like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, soul music is simply that. It's music that comes from the soul. And when you say that, then that opens the door to any genre. Like, I mean, like, you know, a rapper, if what he says is truly coming from his soul, if he's speaking on something that's truly coming from his soul, to me that would be soul music. You know, it's rap, but it's still soul music. Now, when you say neo-soul, to me that's just another label in the record store, another category in the record store. And then once
Correct.
You start, yeah, once you start doing that, then it falls into exactly what you're saying. And so that's why I say, like, over the past couple of years, I've kind of gotten away from that personally as a music fan. But I wanted to ask you, you know, based on what you were just saying, you said there were a few artists out there that are still, you know, holding it down artistically. Like, if you had to name one, you know, who would you say?
I'll name two. Omar and D'Angelo. D'Angelo is funk now, you know, and he's playing the real funk. I mean, his funk is very Prince influenced, and he's actually using some of the cats that Prince used to use, but it's real. Yeah, I mean, it's the real deal. You know, like, the band is hot. You know, his melodies, his performance, it's hot. Omar, to me, I mean, I left hip hop because of Omar. I heard the Four Pleasure record, and I was like, damn, I'm like, you can make music like this today? And so I heard that record, and I quit doing hip hop. And everybody was shocked, because I was like one of those cats, you know, that was supposed to be the next one with hip hop. And so I got out of it, and I went and I started studying, you know, studying this music that I had never heard before by Omar. And that was the beginning of me, you know, getting into, you know, music production as opposed to hip hop production, you know. And that's why today, you know, I don't program anything. Everything is live instruments. You know, I don't do any live programming. Not because I don't like some programming, but because it's become to the point now where when producers are in the house and they program something, the musicianship is gone. So a lot of the records and a lot of the artists that influenced us with the musicianship, we don't have that today. You know, it's kind of like a producer will write and perform all the tracks, and then musicians might play on them or whatever, or they just release the tracks from a computer. So you don't really get to hear the tone of a bass player. You don't get to hear the tone of a guitarist. You know, you get to hear, everybody's playing the same exact keyboard with the same exact patches. So this a whole podcast could basically sound like it's the same producer, because nobody's really switching up a lot of the song. Well, I shouldn't say nobody. I'm just saying a lot of the basement producers that are doing, you know, R&B soul and programming, because they can't get to a full band or whatever it is. And I think that's what helps me change, you know, at least try to be a little bit different than what everybody else is doing. You know, if somebody produces a track and it's all programmed and they use a Fender Rhodes, you know, patch, I use a real Fender Rhodes. And that's because that's what I grew up on. That's the real authentic sound. And there is a difference to me, in my ears, between a real Fender Rhodes and a, you know, in a soft synth. So, you know, I think that D'Angelo, Omar, you know, I think that they're probably two artists that, you know, to me, you know, always keep it real. Maxwell, to me, is a real soul artist. You know, I absolutely agree with you about the neo-soul genre thing, which was you know, the recording artist. I mean, the record industry, you know, did that. But, like, for instance, when I first heard or saw on MTV that punk band, Green Day, I don't know anything about punk music at all. But I saw them on there with a three-piece creating an energy and a sound, and I was like, damn. I didn't care what genre it was. I was amazed at what was coming out of them. And so, you know, so it's not about, you know, the genre of neo-soul. I guess it's just music, of the music industry as a whole. You know, back in the day, we had Stevie Wonders. We still had some whack artists in the 70s, but there were Stevie Wonders getting the opportunity to be a true artist and release records like that. The recording industry doesn't really offer that, but they didn't have the internet in the 70s. So because we have the internet, I feel like there should be a lot more artists that are doing incredible music that I get to hear, and I actually get the opportunity to go on tours in these big festivals, and I don't really see that much, you know, because of the pop industry, you know. It's pretty much, they got it locked down. All the jazz clubs close, you know, all the R&B soul clubs open, they close, and so it's a little bit difficult for indie artists who are trying to do the right thing to get a spot. You know, luckily, Mother's Favorite Child, you know, we've been blessed, but, you know, there's other artists out there that I don't even get to ever hear, you know, because I don't get the opportunity.
I can dig it. Speaking of Mother's Favorite Child, I wanted to ask you, how'd you guys come together, and also if you could talk about the significance of that name?
Mother's Favorite Child came together in Brooklyn. I was writing some songs, and I put some musicians together to do a studio work. I was actually trying to do a compilation record where I was going to have, you know, guest featured artists sing my songs, and I needed musicians to go in the studio. Well, after doing the demo, all the musicians were like, hey, you know, why don't we make this a band? And I had never thought about having a band. I didn't know anything about a band. And I, you know, at first I was like, nah, I don't know anything about that because I'm hip-hop. My thing is, you know, you make a record and, you know, back then putting on the internet was new. And so I didn't know anything about a band. And I was trying to decide between the name of the band was Mother's Favorite Child or this other name. And a guy heard my music and owned a merchandise company. He made T-shirts and all sorts of stuff for all of the record labels. And he said, I'll give you a merchandise deal right now if the name of your band becomes Mother's Favorite Child. So that's why I chose the name Mother's Favorite Child. But it actually, the Mother's Favorite Child came from a poem I wrote, and the poem was called One of God's Favorite Children. And I didn't really, you know, want to have God in the name. So I said, all right, Mother's Favorite Child. And so we did the T-shirts first, and they sold like crazy before we had even done a show. Then we put the music up on the internet when MP3.com was like the indie site to be on. And we ended up, you know, going number one and getting a lot of downloads and plays. And then from the internet, booking agents started calling us because I had put it on there to make it seem like it was a band, and everybody assumed it was a band because it was all live instrumentation. And the next thing you know, I had to basically put a band together because I had all these offers for gigs. And that was the beginning of Mother's Favorite Child.
That's what's up. That's what's up. I want to get into a track, and since you talked about it being born in Brooklyn, I want to play Brooklyn Baby, because I love that track, by the way.
Thank you.
That's hot. That's hot. It makes me wish I was from Brooklyn. But you know what? There's a lot of music that makes me wish I was from Brooklyn.
That's right.
Because it just, I don't know, like, I think Brooklyn is probably, like, you know, outside of, you know, just knowing about New York City, I think Brooklyn is probably the one place in New York that I heard about so much, like just, you know, through hip hop and, you know, because I grew up listening to Jay-Z.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, he reps Brooklyn all day, every day. So I just kept hearing it. And then, you know, I know people from Brooklyn, and I don't know, it's just something about the attitude. I think I would fit right in.
Yeah, there's a swag. There's definitely Brooklyn has its own swag. You know, even outside of Manhattan, you know, or Queens, Brooklyn definitely has its own swag for sure.
Definitely, definitely. All right, so I'm going to get into this track, and then when we come back from that, I got some more questions to ask you. All right, but before we do that, though, if you could, you know, set this song up for the listeners, and then we'll get to it.
Yeah, this track, Brooklyn Baby, actually what's pretty cool about this track is when I first started doing hip-hop, the first sampler I bought, I sampled James Brown. And the track that I sampled had a bass line on it that was played by Fred Thomas, who was James Brown's bass player for 35 years. And Brooklyn Baby, actually, the cat playing bass on it is Fred Thomas. So it's kind of cool that the first song I ever sampled in my life was Fred Thomas on bass, and the first single that I released, you know, after moving to Arizona, is actually Fred Thomas on bass. So it's kind of like a full circle for me, you know. And so this song was recorded 2011, released 2012, Brooklyn Baby featuring Morris Allen on keys and Fred Thomas, Morris Allen on vocals and Fred Thomas on bass.
All right, folks, y'all are going to love this one. Check it out. Baptism by Fire, released this past January 2012. Unless I'm mistaken.
Correct.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
it was released on in January. You can get it on at Amazon, and you can get it on iTunes. Digitally released through Island Def Jam.
Nice. I want to talk about the distribution deal too, because that's another thing. That's another tool that I think independent artists should use. Like, that's probably the one thing about the recording industry that's useful to an independent artist, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I mean, especially if you're not a touring artist or a band, you pretty much, you know, you have to go, you know, you should go through digital distribution, absolutely. So, you know, digital distribution, you know, truly helps me and the band, you know, with sales when we're not doing shows. You know, you do shows, you sell lots of CDs, but, you know, with you know, DJs like yourself, you know, across the globe playing the records, You know, and the fact that they can just get the singles, you know, online. I suggest that every indie artist make sure that they get their music out there digitally for sure with distribution.
Now, oh man, that question, I just had that question in my head. I should have wrote that down. Well, let's talk about the album itself while I
think
of this question. What's the significance of the title, Baptism by Fire?
When I wrote the record, I was going through a breakup. Actually, I was going through a divorce. And so it was kind of like, you know, when you're married or you're in a relationship and, you know, you work hard and you think that you're focused and you have a future and you have your plans and your goals set out. And then, you know, you pretty much, you know, realize that that's not going to be the case. And you go through, you know, trials and tribulations and emotions and all sorts of, you know, financial things. You pretty much have a new rebirth. And so for me, I knew that no longer having a wife and, you know, I owned a marketing company. And so, you know, I was very successful with my marketing company. And then at the time, going through divorce, I didn't have an outlet because I had retired doing music. And so I had decided to just start writing just to vent. And it actually turned into Baptism by Fire. And so for me, I was truly having a new birth, and I had to go through the fire in order to be able to be reborn. And that's, you know, how I came up with the title Baptism by Fire. And then, you know, and then so this is like my first record back after retirement in 2005.
So how many records did you have before this one?
I had about three. I had three digital records, meaning I had three records that were available online that did very well. And then when I decided to start the music again, I actually had all those records taken off the internet so that I could create a whole new, you know, Mother's Favorite Child and a whole new brand. But I had three albums that, you know, did pretty well for us. And then some of the songs I'm actually going to be re-recording with some of the old members of Mother's Favorite Child as well. Because a lot of those songs, you know, they were never pressed on CD. They were never, you know, I mean, it's a whole different way to record and master now. And so, you know, that the older songs are kind of what got me the buzz. You know, we were pretty big on the East Coast. And then, like I said, I retired 3 years ago and my marketing company really became successful. And I, you know, wanted to raise my family and touring wasn't the way to do it. So, so now it's like, it's everything I ever wanted it to be, you know, and so that's, you know, Baptism by Fire was basically like our comeback, you know, my little, like, you know, comeback record as a sampler before the Mother Spirit Child album drops in January of 2013.
I can dig it. And so I know a couple of the other tracks you sent me, let me make sure I have that right, because I loaded three specific tracks that I wanted to play tonight. And
okay.
I know you told me that No Choice is from Nick West, her upcoming CD.
Correct. Nick West is an artist from Arizona, bass player, who, you know, her and I was going to do a single for her. And so I sent her some lyrics, and she loved the lyrics, so we worked on a track. And then she asked me if I had any more in the vault. So I basically sent her a few more tracks. And then, you know, after a month, it was like she had like 14 tracks that I had sent her and lyrics and stuff. And so we decided to do an album together. So the album, Nick West's new record is going to be Paris Tune Presents, you know, Mother Spirit Child featuring Nick West. And her record will be coming out in February. It'll be an import as well from off of Sweet Soul Records, as well as released in the U.S. It won't be her second solo record, but it will be a collaborative record between her, myself, and Mother's Favorite Child.
I can dig it. Yeah, the first time I heard her was, because I scour Twitter and Facebook for artists, like, especially
mm-hmm.
when I first started. Like, that's how I built my rotation up. I literally went and sought the music myself. And so
right.
I came across her, and she sent me Eyes Closed, and I listened to that, and I instantly knew what she was talking about, but I had never heard a song like presented like that. Like, I mean,
right?
It's like if you're not paying attention, you're not going to get it.
Right.
But you know, I got it, and I'm just sitting there like, man, that's incredibly creative and nasty all at once.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what the hell? And so, you know, I told her that one day on Twitter about how much I love that song. And, you know, of course, you know, she was quite amused, but like, I was just serious. Like I was really taken back by the fact that she was creative enough to sing a song about that. And, you know,
right.
I don't want to give it away because I want people to hear that. And
yeah, yeah,
for
definitely.
Themselves. But yeah, that's a song right there. So I'm definitely looking forward to anything new she's got coming out.
Yeah, the record's called, the album that's coming out is called My Relationship. And basically, when she was going through, we were both going through similar things. And so I had written a lot of lyrics, she had written lyrics, and basically we had decided that, you know, maybe we should just put this record out together. And the first track that we dropped was the song called No Choice. Which I think you have, but the record, I'm really excited about this record coming out because I got to do funk, I got to do, you know, soul, I got to do a little bit of, you know, a little bit of, you know, soul funk rock in it, and so this is a little bit different than what her last record was. It's a little bit more raw, plus it's all live instrumentation, so I'm looking forward to seeing what her fans and the people think of this new record that we did, you know, together. Because, you know, I'm definitely feeling it. You know, it's one of those records where you put it in and song after song after. There's no fillers. You know, it's 10 songs, and we just tried to put 10 hot tracks on there. You know, there's no fillers. It's not like 17 songs where, you know, you got 10 good ones and 7, you know, crappy ones. This is like, you know, we just tried to put good songs on the record.
I'm really trying to understand why artists would do that. Like, you know, I mean, I'm relatively new to the business side of music, so, you know, hearing terms like filler, I'm just really learning about that stuff. So, I just don't understand, like, why would an artist do that? Like, what would compel an artist to want to have filler tracks on their CD? Like, it just makes no sense.
You know, it's really strange to me because I think it's just like, for instance, if you look at Stevie Wonder's Inner Vision, I think there was 9 songs on there. And it's like all 9 songs are hot. And I think what happened was people just felt like, well, you know, like Prince would do, you know, B-sides. If he felt like it wasn't right for the album, he would put out a single and have a B-side. And I just think that because, you know, maybe there's too many Yes people around folks now, you know, and they just think that whatever it is that they do is hot. And, and sometimes people like the idea of having 17, 15, 18 songs on a record. I know, like, you know, for me, if I have to keep pressing, you know, like interludes, you know, if I have to press forward and forward and forward, that's aggravating to me. You know, back in the day, you put an LP on beginning to end, and then, you know, the record would flip over and beginning to end, and it was hot. And so I really don't know why. I mean, the fact that we even call them fillers, you know, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, you know, it doesn't make any sense to me either. I really don't know the official reason. I know that when we do imports, I mean, you know, our licensing deal with companies outside of America, we end up putting 3 bonus tracks on a record so that it's different than the U.S. release. You know, that's a little bit different, but I really can't tell you why people put 14 to 17 songs on a record and they have fillers on. I really can't. I don't know.
Yeah, now, interludes, I can understand, but an interlude, in my opinion, only works if it brings the whole album, it
together.
Brings a theme to a whole album. Like, I heard
right.
an album once, and I'm trying to remember what it was, but basically, this album was this guy's journey from one place to another. And
mm-hmm.
as a matter of fact, it was... DJ Jazzy Jeff, his last the last hip-hop mixtape that he did. And he
mm-hmm.
had these different interludes where, you know, like they basically chronicle his journey to go pick up his son. And, like, you know, he would stop at different places. Like, he had one interlude where he stopped at a McDonald's, and the lady at the drive-thru asked him, was it him? And then she asked him, was, you know, did he talk to Will Smith? And all? But, you know, it's like when you have interludes like that where they kind of tie the rest of the album together, then, yeah, it makes sense.
Right.
But when you're just throwing things out there, and it's really, like you said, I guess that's where the term filler comes from, because it has no other meaning or no other, you know, reasoning behind it but to just fill out the album. Now,
well, also price point. I'm sure, you know, if you have when you're trying to sell a record, and they say, well, how many songs in the record? And you say, well, there's 9 songs in a record, and let's say that record is $10, and then you've got another album that's got 17 songs on the record for $10. You know, it may be that people think they're getting more for their buck because they actually have more songs. What they don't realize is that those extra songs shouldn't even be out, you know. But that's the only other thing I could think of is price point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense. That's probably the only thing about it that makes sense is the price point, as you said. I mean, but then again, I mean, I guess this is the end result of the commodification of music. It's like now you have to think about that when you release a CD. You know, before, you know, it just didn't seem like you had to think about that. It was just, okay, I'm going to make this music, I'm going to put it out, you know, and hopefully it'll be received. And you know, and I think that's part of what gives, like, you know, these record labels and even some of these artists, these huge artists, kind of like a sense of entitlement, because it's like they don't have to work for it anymore. It's like, you know, they have such a following where for them to lose that following, they would have to do something so drastic.
Right.
You know, where these listeners are going to listen to be like, oh, come on, this is ridiculous. But,
right.
You know, I mean, as long as they keep doing the same thing that they're always doing, they're going to get the same love. And I'm not hating, you know, like, whatever, you know, that's what works. But it takes something away from creativity and artistry, in my opinion. Like, because, you know, now you just have that formula, like you mentioned earlier. You just have that formula. They're following it. They're not really doing anything. And, you know, it's kind of like cheating almost.
Well, I think, you know, I mean, it is a business, you know. We all have
right.
to remember that, you know, the music business is music business, and so you have the art, and you know there are artists that, you know, break through, that are able to do incredible art and break through. But then it gets to the point where, like, you know, they have to sell more units, they got to push more units, so they might have to change the sound, or they might have to have somebody collaborate with them, or, you know, have somebody featured or do something that's a little bit more popular sounding. It's just kind of like the lifespan, you know, of an artist. And also, you know, like when Beyonce, you know, think of all the labels and all the people that tried to push a female artist and lost money, you know, because they wanted the next Beyonce, or they wanted something to be able to compete with Beyonce. You know, the sad thing is, you know, before we used to have A&R, there was artist development. There really isn't that anymore. You know, now it's like they used to sign an artist and work with the artist to bring the artist up into, you know, so that on their sophomore record they could possibly do really great, or their third album. Now pretty much it's like, you know, if you don't have, you know, 500,000 hits on YouTube, if you haven't downloaded or had enough, you know, sales on iTunes, we don't even want to talk to you. So they're really looking for artists who are already establishing themselves as indie artists. And now for an indie artist who's doing well, the record labels are going to have to be able to do something a lot bigger, because it's like, why should I give up all this to make, you know, about the same amount of money, or to possibly lose my freedom to be able to do what I want to do, because distribution has changed the game. So, you know, it's a business. And, you know, the kind of music that I do, there's a certain demographic that looks for that kind of music. So the music that Mother's Favorite Child does, with the live instrumentation and the lyrical content, there's enough people out there that are hungry for that kind of music, and that supports us to where we can continue to do the kind of music that we do. We just want to let people know that, you know, there are other options out there, you know, and hopefully with, you know, DJs like yourself and DJs around the globe that really appreciate live instrumentation, lyrics, and melodies, you know, we grow a little bit every day, literally, you know, and then eventually you have enough fan base and a following that you can tour around the world and sell lots of records and downloads and make a name for yourself. And that's basically what Mother Spirit Child is doing now, or trying to do at least, you know.
I can dig it. I want to get into another track, but before that, I want to ask you one more question in regards to what we're talking about now. And basically that's in your opinion, where do you see, you know, let me put it this way, because I used to say a lot that, you know, with digital distribution and you know, the way things are just opening up and, you know, kind of leveling the playing field, at least on the creative side of, you know, making music. I've always said that at some point, you know, like the record industry would have to either adapt to the artist, and I think you touched on it a little bit, like they'd have to either adapt to the artist or die. Now, I'm kind of anti record label, at least major record label. I'm anti because of all the things that we talked about before. And in my mind, I want to see a world without them. You know, I'll just be honest. I want to see a world without them because I don't think that artists need them anymore. Now, I'm not saying that the record label as an idea should go away. No, because, you know, there's benefit to that. But I'm talking about the record labels that control the music. Like, I just see, like, there's really no need for it. And like you were saying, with digital distribution, and even, and there's some detriment to it, even the access to creating music, you know, like with all this software and, you know, like you were saying, you mean you don't like to go that route, but it's there if an artist chooses to use it. I just see that at some point, major record labels and the machine are going to become obsolete. And I guess I want to know what your opinion about that is.
From what I've seen, just based, let's say, I don't know, from the year 2000, 2001, what I've seen and what I would possibly project, we'll just, instead of saying record label, we'll just say corporations, for product. They always look to the streets or to the indie artist as to what's hot and what's happening. And they're always a step behind. So for instance, with the internet, if you have any knowledge or any experience with the internet and the music industry, in the beginning, they didn't want to touch it because they didn't know what to do with it. They just knew that they couldn't control it. It was out of control, and they were just suing everybody that had music online.
Right.
And so what I see is, I mean, if you think about, you know, how Apple, what Apple did as a corporation, and basically, I mean, Apple almost controls the record labels now. You know, Tower Records could have done the same thing that Apple did, but they didn't have, you know, they didn't have the nerds in there to be able to write all the programs to do all that stuff. All the record stores closed. So I think what's going to happen is, the corporations allow us, you know, entrepreneurs and indie artists, to build things. And then what they do is they buy us out or they squash us and they take it over. MP3.com is a perfect example of that, you know. When and if Target or Walmart find a product that they can sell per square footage that gives them a better return than a CD, they will kick CDs out of their store. Walmart and Target are not selling CDs because they're trying to make it convenient for people because they want to offer artistic music. They sell it because it's profitable for them as of right now. Okay?
Right.
The recording labels or the record companies will eventually get into internet radio. They'll eventually, you know, take over as much as they possibly can that we build up, and then we'll have to find something new. Because eventually, like, people are not going to buy music. They're going to feel that they don't have to buy it. That it's, that they, because they, you know, like, the next generation, they don't know what an LP is. They don't know what it's like to open up an LP and see lyrics and artwork and all that. They can go to a website and see that. They can go to a bootleg website and download a whole album for free and not pay for it. So it's going to probably have to be sponsors that support, you know, artists in the future, in order for them to make a living, because the music is pretty much going to be given away for free. And so that's where the labels, I think, are going to have to figure out what in the heck to do, because they're not going to be able to sell. So maybe what's going to end up happening is, you know, because of internet radio, maybe they're going to start taking a higher percentage of, you know, internet play, because internet radio pays. So they will find a way, and they're already working on it right now, I'm sure, certain of it, because their numbers keep dropping down. And we'll just have to keep being, you know, creative and finding ways to do new things and find new ways to be successful. And then they will then follow suit and buy, you know, because let's say, for instance, somebody says to you, you know, we'd like to buy your show. You know, we're going to give you a couple $1 million for it. You're going to say, okay, well, where do I sign? And that's how it starts.
You know,
and
what?
Then they,
I mean, no, go ahead and finish your statement.
No, Dan, that's how it works. Like, MP3.com was sued, and the indie artist built MP3.com, you know? And I think his name was Michael, you know, who owned it. You know, we were one of the bands that was number one. You know, I think we had over a couple hundred thousand downloads and streams before even iTunes was created. You know, and they were getting sued by everybody. I think they were getting sued with up to $26 million they were being sued for. The next thing you know, Universal cuts them a check and buys them, pays their $26 million tab, and takes it over. And then what did they do? They put all their artists on it and shut down all the indie artists, literally, overnight. So, and then they sold advertising to all the other record labels. So the biggest site in the world for indie artists used to be MP3.com. We built it. It became worth a lot of money. They sold it to the majors. The majors shut us down, because you have to understand, if an indie artist like me, who isn't signed to, you know, a major record label and going on tour and being financed and all that other stuff, if I'm taking money from an artist that they signed because I'm now digging into their fans, that's hurting them. They don't want me. They don't want me in the game. So the best thing they could do is buy the company. Instead of losing, you know, millions and millions of dollars, they said, we'll just buy the company, shut down all the indie artists, and we'll use it as a marketing site. And that's exactly what they did. So they'll do the same thing again with radio stations and with, you know, any other avenues they have, you know, whether it's Reverb Nation or Facebook. They'll just keep finding ways, and which is what they're supposed to do as a business. And we as artists are supposed to create art and then also find, you know, people that can be creative in business to make sure that our art can continue to live and you know, financially support us. So I don't think like everybody else when they say, oh, I say, you know, it's been happening. If you just go back and look at the history of music and the history of business, the history of America, it's been happening since day one. You just have to know that it's going to happen and be prepared and just try to be ahead of the game. And that's how I view it, and that's kind of how I live it. You know, I'm not saying that I agree with it, but my job as an artist is to make good music. My job as a businessman is to make sure that good music can get out to the public and the masses, and then financially support me so that I can continuously make good music. All that other stuff becomes irrelevant.
Point taken. Point taken. Yeah. Before I get into the song, I was just going to say, because, you know, when you just said about them buying out the radio stations, it just made me think, like, what would I do if that ever happened to me? Because, you know, I created this radio station for the sole purpose of having a platform for indie artists. So, like, you know, then it's a matter of integrity versus $1 million. And, you know, I'm not going to lie and say that's not really tempting. I mean, because it's $1 million. It's like, you know, they see that worth in what I'm doing. But at the same time, it's like, if they see that and they're willing to give me $1 million just to to do what you're saying they're going to do, is it worth me taking it?
Well, here's the reality. I mean, let's look at MTV, right? Music television. There's no music on it anymore. Let's look at BET. You know, when I was growing up, MTV had Yo MTV Raps. BET had Donnie Simpson. They all start off with the integrity and a cause. And then eventually they realize it's a business. And it's about profit. And so, you know, then as you become a bigger business, you have more people working, you have a board, people take votes. Everything changes the bigger you get. The more sought after you are, the more you're worth, the more people are willing to pay you. There is a number that everybody is basically, you know, for sale for. You know, like you said, $1 million would be tempting. What about $5 million? It would not be even a question. So as an indie artist, you know, if somebody comes to me, a major record label, and says, hey, we want to give you this up front, but we'd like to possibly have a little bit of artistic freedom. Now I have to sit down with the band and say, hey, guys, we got a couple of $1 million record deal on the table here, but they want to be a part of the show. Do we turn that down? You know, so, you know, that's just a part of life. And so, like I said, you know, if you do what you do and I do what I do, you and I can coexist and we can help one another grow and possibly be a part of the change in a good way as opposed to the change over. You know what I mean? And so that's what it's about. You know, I would never, you know, what I would say is he had a great radio show. He interviewed a lot of indie artists. And he worked his butt off to get to the point where he could sell his radio show for a couple of $1 million. Now the question is, who's going to do what he did next? Not
gonna be
you sold out.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, if I sell that, oh, you best believe I'm coming back with something else. Like,
there
I,
you go.
I just can't.
Let me tell you something. You sell your company for a couple of $1 million, there will be a no-compete clause on that contract. Because that's how that goes down. But the thing is, if you get to that point, you did your job. You created a very successful show, and in the meantime, all these indie artists got to get promoted, and you helped grow, and they helped, you know, helped you grow. And the reality is, then the next cat in line to be a DJ should be looking at you and looking at what you did to say, I want to do what he did, and then there'll be another one. And that's what it's about. You know, that's what it's about. It's about doing the best that you could possibly do, and then if you can reap, you know, rewards and benefits from it, you know, there is no selling out. Anybody who sells out, they have to answer to a higher being for selling out. It's not the fans, it's not the record labels, it's internally as an artist. If you sell out, you know, there's somebody else that you have to answer to within yourself that, you know, anybody else says anything, it really doesn't mean anything. So, like, for me, I just want to do, you know, what it is that I do to the highest level that I can possibly do it. And, you know, and that's pretty much it. You know, and, like, I don't even really do interviews. You know, I don't put my face on the cover of my CDs. That's not why I'm in this game. I'm in this game as an artistic release, and I'm hoping that my music, when I share it, somebody else can feel it, and they go, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's it for me. And then the fact that somebody's willing to buy it and pay my mortgage with it and all that, that's just the greatness of it. So I can't switch up what I do because it's working. If it wasn't working, I can understand, well, maybe I got to do something different, you know, to make a living in this. But what I'm doing is working because I'm truly, you know, sincere with what I do. I'm not writing hooks for the radio. I'm writing lyrics and I'm writing songs. And whoever feels them, feels them. They're not for the radio. So when a DJ takes it and says, I want this record, I want to play this, I didn't do it for you. I didn't make that record for you. The fact that you actually liked it, it's a blessing. The fact that somebody downloads it and buys it is even more of a blessing. But that's my blueprint. So that's my brand. That's what Mother's Favorite Child is. We're not worried about the programming sound. We're not worried about radio. You know, we're not worried about, you know, putting pretty girls on the front of a cover. That's not why we're in this game. And because we stay true to the music and what we do, there's enough demographic out there that has that kind of respect for us, and or will say, damn, I guess I got to go check these people out, because from what I'm hearing, they're the real deal. They're writing real lyrics, real melodies, real instrumentation, real musicianship. And then if they like it, they're fans for life.
Exactly.
So that's what it's about for me. You know, just like you and I. You know, we're gonna be cool for forever. You know, however big you get, however big I get, we're gonna be like, yeah, man. You know, we cool. What do you need? You want the next single before anybody else? Cool, no problem. So that's what it's about. You know, that's what this whole, it's an experience. It's all about that. And, you know, and if you can make money doing it, you know, great, you know, and be happy. Like I said, luckily, Mother's Favorite Child, you know, makes money doing music, but because we understand the business aspect of music as well, to be professional at it, you know?
Again, point taken, and well put, as a matter of fact. Before I get into the song, you know, we've been having this conversation for so long, I just realized that the live broadcast section of this show is actually about to go off the air, so I need to say a few things. If you are listening live, thank you. If you want to hurry up and get in on the rest of this conversation before we actually go into... Actually, no, it's actually too late for that now, so I won't do all that. But if you are listening via the archives, thank you. I appreciate that. And as always, I'll welcome you to listen in live every Friday, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on the Flavor News Radio Network and Soul City Radio. And that being said, we are now in what Blog Talk Radio likes to consider, well, what the Circle likes to call overtime. So, you know, right now, everything that we're going... The rest of this interview is being recorded for the archives. So anyone who's listening via the archives gets a chance to hear the entire interview. But those who are listening live at this point, they're gone. Now, that being said, I want to get into the next track. And after we come back from the track, I want to talk about the songwriting process and what it means for you.
Okay, cool.
All right, and we want to play Until Now because, no, as a matter of fact, we want to play No Choice because that was the last song that we were talking about. And, you know, you already set that up very brilliantly before, so we're just going and get into it. This is off of Nick West's upcoming CD. You said it's called No Relationship?
Or My Relationship.
Yeah. And this is No Choice. And check it out.
Because your choices won't make me
Frame of that song, it has the same vibe to it. It's like, it's, I guess what they would call mid-tempo. I'm not real familiar with tempos and all of that stuff, but
yeah, it's definitely mid-tempo. I do most of the stuff that I write is either mid-tempo or ballad. You know, the up-tempo stuff that's a little bit faster, that's, you know, I don't really write funk and up-tempo music. When we do, it's more of a jam session from the band, and then I'll write something to that, and then we'll arrange a jam session. But yeah, that would be considered mid-tempo.
Yeah, that's really nice right there. I can only imagine what the rest of that album is going to be like.
Yes, I'm really happy with the way it's come out so far, and it's being released in Japan on Sweet Soul Records first in February. I think Valentine's Day actually is when it gets released in Japan, and then it's going to be released in America in March. So 30 days after the release in Japan, it'll drop in March. Same with Mother's Fairy Child. Mother's Fairy Child album's being released in January in the States as well as in Japan in January through Sweet Soul Records.
Cool. I saw a picture on your Facebook page earlier. Is that the album itself, or is that... No, that was Baptism by Fire. It just looked completely different.
Oh, okay. Yeah, what happened was Baptism by Fire came out, and it started selling really well in Japan. And so this record label, Sweet Soul Records, heard the Baptism by Fire album. And so they contacted us, and we thought that they were, you know, they wanted to purchase a certain amount of units as an import. And what they ended up actually doing was giving us a licensing manufacturing deal where they actually press up the record in Japan, and it's got Japanese text and everything, and then there's three bonus tracks on that record that I did not release originally through the on the Baptism by Fire US release. So there's actually three songs on that record that you can only get on the Japanese version. So yeah, that actual album, Baptism by Fire, with me on the cover of it, is printed in Japan, and then we have our US version, which has the artwork on it. On the front.
Let me ask you about that, because I always find that interesting, that when U.S. artists release music outside of the U.S., they always seem to get more. Like the first time I noticed that was with Boyz II Men, when they released the Coolie High Harmony CD. And
yeah.
Then a few years later, I saw the European version. And I'm looking at it, and it's got like five or six more tracks. And I'm like, what is this?
I just want to know
why we getting shorted like this.
Here's why. I can tell you why it is with what I do. Let's say HMV or Tower Records is a, you know, because they have record stores, you know, in Japan where people actually go and buy CDs and LPs.
Right.
So let's say, for instance, the vendor at Tower Records wants the Baptism by Fire CD, okay? So they go ahead and they buy, you know, a whole bunch of those units. Well, if a record label in Japan says, wow, look at how this record is selling, let's give them a deal and let's get a few more bonus tracks from them so that people would rather buy our version than buy the U.S. version. And we'll also put it in Japanese so that it will be like a collector's item. So in America, if somebody wants that particular record, it's going to cost them $35, you know, which is pretty much what they're paying for the U.S. version at Tower Records. But if it's printed in Japan, they're not paying $35 for that CD, plus they're getting three extra tracks. So that's pretty much, I believe, the way it works. You know, if we give them some exclusive tracks in Europe or Japan, and you can only get them on those particular CDs, well, you're most likely going to want to get the Japan release because it's got the same amount of songs plus three bonus tracks that you can't get anywhere else. So it just basically it makes it a little bit more appetizing.
Shoot, now I have to get the Japan release because, I mean, like, it's like I don't want to be shorted. Like, I want the music. Not to be honest, like, I've been looking for the European version of that Boys and Men CD since I've seen it. Like, I knew someone who had it, but they wouldn't let me get it.
They would have never
got it back. So I was like, okay. But I've been looking for it myself. And
you might have to go eBay, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, I've always found that interesting. I'm glad you were able to give me an answer because I was always confused about that. I just didn't understand. You know, I could understand. Well, actually, no, I couldn't understand it at all. So, thank you.
You also have to remember that the culture in other countries is a little bit different. I think that they have a little bit more appreciation for art and for music.
Yeah, that
is. Some songs that you know, maybe Americans or the record labels would feel that Americans wouldn't like, they basically just, you know, release in other countries, you know? And, you know, because I have an import or whatever. I think it's Wizard from London of D'Angelo, you know, when he released that live record or whatever. And, you know, I think it's a great album. And, you know, it's just like, well, why is it not in America? Like, why, you know what I mean? So, I can't say. It's just... Maybe it's just how they do things in order, you know, once you do one thing, then it becomes standard. So it's like, maybe it's just what they do, you know. They get a deal by being able to offer bonus tracks. But, yeah, no, I hear you, though, about being shorted.
I mean, you know, it's cool. Like, now that you've explained it, I can understand it. So I won't be upset, but I still feel like I'm being shorted. But,
right.
You know, that's neither here nor there. But, yeah, I want to talk about the songwriting process. Now,
okay. For
you, I mean, do you have a specific process? I mean, do you need the music first? Do you write the lyrics first? Like, how is
it? It's like, for instance, I've been having songwriting sessions for the last 4 days at my home studio instead of the real studio while we're getting, you know, our real studio while we're switching out to get a new mixing board coming. And so the writing process has been different. You know, in the last 4 days, I think I've gotten 24 songs written, and the process has been different. I could wake up, write some lyrics, give them to Tanya. She then goes ahead and, you know, works on a melody with you know, the guitarist or keyboard player. And that could be one process. Another process could be that I've actually got musical ideas, and then I actually write lyrics to it after. So I don't really have a set way of how I write it. In any way that you can think of where it's either I'm writing lyrics first or writing the music first, me creating the melody, Morris creating the melody, or TA creating the melody, it's all like a collaboration. So it's just whatever the process is or the spirit is at the moment, that's how it happens. There's no process. Like, you know, it's not like I have to do the lyrics or the music first. It's whatever we're feeling, that's how it happens.
Got you. Now, the reason why I always ask about songwriting is because I'm a poet and I'm looking to actually get into songwriting. I believe we talked about it a little bit when you were on with us for Morris Allen's interview.
And, okay.
You know, I've always just been curious because, like, as someone who doesn't play an instrument, I find it hard. Like, for me, it's like, I guess I'm so used to writing poetry that even when I try to write a song, and I've learned about, you know, the structure and, you know, writing the bridge. And I think the problem with me is, you know, not having any melodies. And, you know, the last person that I spoke to about this, you know, showed me, I guess, a quick way to kind of, I guess, get used to writing with melody. And then, you know, I've kind of done some research and, you know, I found a couple of apps or something, you know, just to kind of help me create melody. But I'm starting to understand that that's where I'm lacking. Like, I can write the lyric, but it's the melody is where I'm lacking.
Right. Well, I can tell you right now, people call me a songwriter. Jessica Kilmore, who's a, you know, dear friend of mine who I'm producing songs for on her new record, she calls me a poet. I don't necessarily write songs in the verse, chorus, bridge formula. I rant. So basically, I just write whatever it is I'm feeling at the time, boom, 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 boom. And then I then may structure that into a song. And the reason I think that works better as an artist or lyrics work a little bit better that way is because if you write in an A, B, C, D, A, B, A, B format, it becomes very simple, mundane, and in my opinion, not as artistic lyrically. So, for instance, when I was working with Morris, he was used to writing in a certain formula, you know, A, B, you know, C, D, A, B, C, D, and that was his formula. Whereas my formula is, however I'm venting at the time, whether there's too many words, a whole bunch of words rhyming at one time, you know, I think of like Rakim, you know, so I just write whatever it is I'm feeling, and I look for that, I look for those one-liners, or I look for the, you know, those things, and then I tell the melody makers, it's your responsibility now to keep the integrity of this poem, but create a melody that works. And so if you would even listen to Brooklyn Baby, you know, I wrote the lyrics to that, I wrote the melody and the music, but if you listen to the melody of that song, it's really spoken words, a story, and there's no real melody to the song. It's almost like talk song, because that's the way that I wrote the melody, because I can't write melodies like Morris or T.A. because I'm not a singer. If you look at some of the songs that Morris co-wrote with me on Baptism, you know, I taught him how to think differently about the writing process, and he taught me to look at how to also look at the melody, you know, if I am writing and I'm thinking about a melody, to make sure that I'm not using too many words in a particular area. But I think really just write, and if the poem is great, it can be turned into a song, because all a song is, if you take all the music out and there's just words there, those are just lyrics. It's a poem. And so I like to write and say, could this song stand up on its own without music, without a melody? Just reading it, could you say, wow, these are some nice words, or wow, this is a nice line? And if you start getting into worrying too much about formula, your creative process, you're going to cut it some, because you're now locking yourself into a box. We would never have had a hip-hop artist or lyricist like Rakim flowing the way he did if somebody told him that you had to say, you know, throw your hands in the air, wave, and just like you just don't care, you know? And so my advice to you is, if you're not a melody maker, get with a melody maker and learn the process of melody making, and tell them, take my lyrics and, you know, help me make a melody, and show me how you would take the song without dissecting it so much that the poem disappears, but to actually create a song. And then eventually you'll start to learn the process of melody making. And that's just my advice to, you know, any writer out there. You know, forget the formula. If we follow a formula, that means that we're doing the same thing that everybody else is doing. Create something new to where people go, wow, damn, you know. And but it's about the lyrics first. If you're a lyricist and you're a poet, it's about the lyrics. Now have somebody that makes melodies work with you to help create a melody. Then musicians or producers can put any kind of beat and music to your track, you know, to your poem and your melody.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I actually had to jot that down, because, I mean, that seems more natural for me, you know, instead of trying to...
Well, you're a poet.
Right.
You're a poet, you know what I mean? And here's part of the problem. Part of the problem is, a lot of songwriters, are shitty poets. So if you're a poet first, you write poetry. So you shouldn't have to dummy down your art form because, you know what I'm saying, like just to add music to you know, add lyrics to music, you shouldn't have to dumb it down. That would be like saying that musicians or producers have to dumb down their production for a poet. No. You try to bring both to the same level. That's why people are so upset with Eric B and Rakim, because everybody wanted a better DJ than Eric B. They wanted, you know, Jazzy Jeff, you know, to be with Eric B, because back in the day, you know, having the dopest DJ and having a dope MC, that was it, you know what I mean? And so this never ever, you know, dumb down your art to fit somebody else's structure. Create a structure that fits yours. That's just my opinion.
I like
you know, and I've had heated debates with Morris about it because I drive him crazy because he's like, but I'm like, well, find a way, and we did, and we do, you know, and you know, sometimes you got to give up a few words or two or have a line reworked, but it's okay. But as long as they know that you're not going to follow that, you know, that structure, that standard structure, you'll be fine.
Point taken. All right, I got one more track I want to play. And now we're going to play Until Now. And I wanted to ask, who is Tiet?
Okay. T.A. is one of the singers in Mother's Fairy Child. Yeah, T.A. is one of the singers in Mother's Fairy Child. She's been with Mother's Fairy Child almost from the beginning. And she has her own solo record coming out, produced by me and Mother's Fairy Child, coming out in 2013. And she is... the female vocalist in Mother's Fairy Child. We have Mars and we have T.A. And this is a duet between T.A. and Mars.
Cool. All right. And now let me do this now before I play it, because I failed to actually have you introduce the whole group. I mean, because, you know, I want to know how many members there are, you know, their names. Instruments, like, you know, I want to try to give them, I want to try to put as much of the band out there as possible.
Okay. Well, we have Mars and T.A., who are vocalists in Mother's Fairy Child. We have Ted Belladin, who plays keys and saxophone in Mother's Fairy Child. Alex Kin has plays bass. Dawell Davis plays drums. We have various guitarists that play with us, Kenny Brown, as well as Charles Bond. That's pretty much the core of the live band. And then we also have people that play on the albums, you know, like the Regiment Horns. That's the horn section we use that plays on the new Mother's Fairy Child album. Fred Thomas guest appeared on the record. And, you know, Mother's Fairy Child, a lot of it is a collective. So we have a production team, and then we have others that guest appear on the album, and then we have, you know, our core band that plays live. But there are a lot of different musicians that actually play on a lot of my tracks, because I produce so many songs and I work with a lot of different artists. My core band can't just play on every single track. So we actually have people that from Brooklyn, L.A., you know, Atlanta, Boston, a lot of different people that are playing on a lot of, you know, a lot of my tracks.
Got you. All right, and now we'll get into this. Until Now, featuring T.A.
T.A., correct.
And Morris Allen. If you could set this up, we'll get to it.
Sure. This is Until Now, produced and written by Paris Tuna, Mother's Fairy Child, featuring T.A. and Morris Allen. Until Now.
Tattoo.
I didn't even want to interrupt that. I'm telling you, it is nothing like, you know, like a band. I try, and I don't take anything away from like production, because there's a lot of good music that comes from production. But there's something to say when, you know, you have a group of people that can work well together and create music. I mean, one of my favorite bands of all time. And it just seems like in every decade, there's one. There's one. You know, there's always one, at least one. You know, like my favorite band of all time is New Birth. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, they rock. Like, I mean, anybody who listens to New Birth and cannot feel what they're doing, something's wrong.
They were just here last week in Arizona.
For real?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I would love to see them live.
I didn't get to see them. Everybody was playing, so we didn't get to see them. But, yeah, they were here last week. They were here last week. But they are no joke. New Birth is, you know. But, you know, that's that musicianship thing. You know, it's just a different time. And,
right.
you know, it's not a matter of that. You know, we can't have, you know, incredible R&B soul bands. It's just that, you know. Based on, you know, luckily, like I said, you know, we have a recording studio, and we have, you know, huge rehearsal space, and we have just been blessed, you know, to be supported by our fans and things like that. So we're in a position to where, you know, I'm able to record live drums, you know, live guitars, live bass, and you know, but a lot of people, are so used to the program sound that it's almost like their ears aren't used to live music. So even hearing a song like Until Now or No Choice, you know, on regular radio, they I don't even know how people, you know, would react to it next to a track that's all programmed. You know what I mean? As far as like, there's definitely sonically a different thing, you know. And but
you know
live
what,
musicianship,
though?
The organic is there.
But you know what, though? I mean, the fact that, like, okay, I'll put it like this. I mean, you know, the most popular band of our generation, or at least our time, in my opinion, is Mink Condition. And, you know, they found a way to always, you know, they haven't changed the way they do music at all.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and they still managed to, you know, have the notoriety. So I what I'm saying is, if they can do it, you know, any band that's making good quality music can do it. It's really just about, you know, like being able to grapple with the business side, you know, because, you know, if you have a music appreciator who really appreciates music, and, you know, they throw turns around like audio files and all that, you know, but if that someone is able to really listen to music and appreciate it, and I'll just say, if they're able to appreciate it, I believe they would be able to, you know, discern, you know, live instrumentation. Because it's
Yeah,
it's not hard to decipher between the two. It's not hard. I mean, I guess I do it because I listen to music all day, every day, you know, in one form or another. So it's like, I can tell.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure that, you know, someone who really listens to music can tell. But even if they can't tell, if the music is good, it shouldn't even matter. Like, they should be able to enjoy it.
I mean, one thing that I can say for Mother's Favorite Child fans is our fans are music lovers. It's not like we you know what I mean? Like when people, you know, we have poets that are fans of our music. We have musicians that are fans of our music. DJs are just people that love, you know, live music and you know, what they call the, you know, good old music. So we're lucky because we actually have, you know, fans who like our music. And it's not like they're being, you know, spoon-fed our music. So it's not like, you know what I mean? It's like, and then when people have never heard anything like Mother's Favorite Child, whether they see us at a show or hear the music for the first time, you know, it's kind of enlightening for them because they're like, wow, this is, they, even if they're not into live instrumentation, they know that there's something organic about it that's different than just the regular, you know, programmed tracks. And so we are starting to get, like, I got an email, you know, this year from a woman in Texas who was getting married and told me that she was going to, the gift, the song, The Gift, which is on the Baptism by Fire album, that was going to be her wedding song. And so I was like, wow, like of all the songs in the world that you could pick for your wedding, you guys chose The Gift. And so that was deep to me. You know what I mean? Because it was like, okay, this person here, you know, really is feeling what it is that I and Morris wrote and what the band played. And so, you know, it's stuff like that that makes me, you know, continue to do the live instrumentation and try to just, you know, get the music to as much demographic as possible that are really into, you know, organic, live, you know, R&B soul, you know. Because there are some great program tracks out there, but there are tracks out there that aren't great, but I know that if they were actually played by a band, those tracks could become great. It's just that the translation gets lost because they didn't have the access of the live instrumentation, you know, and that organic feel. And that's why, you know, I'm always looking for, you know, artists, singers to work with and different things because I would like to be able to produce and write some songs for some artists who are, you know, out there who have a pretty decent fan base with their program stuff, but actually let their fans hear them on something that's a full live band that's R&B soul, just to kind of show people, hey, you know, there's still a sound, you know, that the original R&B sound is still out there. You know, the band, the musicians are still here. It's just that not everybody has access to a band and you know, the finances of a big recording studio. So, you know, I'm always looking for singers all the time.
Oh, well, shoot. I can send a lot of singers your way. Trust and believe.
Send as many as you want that are serious, that are like, you know, the real deal and, you know, just need an opportunity or people that are already out there doing it that are just possibly looking for, you know, to collaborate with Mother's Favorite Child. I would absolutely love to work with, you know, indie artists that are out there doing it, you know, getting radio play out there, doing shows and doing it to spread, you know, the Mother's Favorite Child sound as well as to be able to collaborate with some you know, some good artists.
Good. Well, that's what's up. We'll definitely talk about that offline because I have two that come to mind right now that I definitely want to talk to you about.
No problem.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Yeah, and I'm about to wrap this thing up, though, but before I let you go and before I end this show, I want to give you the opportunity to put anything out there that you need to have put out there. And then the floor is yours.
Yeah, I think if anybody wants to hear any of the material that we've been talking about tonight, they can visit mothersfavoritechild.com or paristoon.com, paristoon.com. We also are working on a remix album that's going to be free for everybody. We've remixed D'Angelo, Mos Def, Felicia Keys, Rakim, Nas, Maxwell, Lauryn Hill, Layla Hathaway, and we're basically going to be giving this eight-song album away for free. It's going to be a free download promotional thing, and all we're doing is we're just trying to showcase live instrumentation on some of our favorite artists.
Oh, that's what's up. That's what's up right there. Yeah, you sent me one of those tracks, too. Well, actually, two. The Alicia Keys track and the...
cool. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I remember that. I wanted to ask you, the Alicia Keys track, what was the title of that? Was that New York, was that New York State of Mind? Remix was? Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought that was. It just sounded so different, I had to really listen to it.
Yeah, that's New York State of Mind, and that's the full band, all live instrumentation, and it's Nick West also guest appearing on bass on that track, and T.A.'s on background vocals. And the band, and we did that, you know, for fun. I got a friend who's, you know, in the industry, and he sends me acapellas and stuff. And I was just like, he's like, you know, why don't you start remixing some of these classic tracks? It's been a minute, and I just said, cool. So we've been doing that, and like I said, we're gonna drop it's gonna be a Mother's Favorite Child mixtape, and it's gonna be like some of our favorite artists or just some artists and tracks that I just felt like, you know, I could remix and do a pretty decent job with it. And so that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I definitely dig that. Well, brother, I thank you for...
Thank you.
You know, like I said, you know, going out of your way like that, you know, turning around, going to get your phone and all that, I really appreciate that. And anytime, you know, when the new album drops, you got to come back. You know, anytime you need the airspace, just let me know.
I definitely will,
again.
And I'll we'll get Nick with you next when her record drops.
Yeah,
for sure.
I definitely need to talk to her. So yeah, that's what's up.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that.
All right, cool. Well, yeah, brother, I'm not gonna hold you. Want to go ahead and get this show under wraps.
Cool, man. Thank you very much for the support.
No doubt. All right, folks, yes. Wait a minute, let me, this thing is acting crazy. Really? Really, Switchboard, you're just going to do me like this? Okay, all right. There we go. All right, folks. That was Paris Tune of Paris Tune featuring Mother's Favorite Child. Yes, you got to go check out their music. It's really good stuff. I hope you enjoyed the music that we played tonight. And I just hope you enjoyed the show, period. You know, things didn't go quite as planned, but that's usually when they turn out the best, because that organic stuff is always the best stuff. And anyone who knows me and when I do radio, I always try to keep things as organic as possible. So, you know, it just always seems better. I mean, it's just like music, you know, when it's done right and it's, you know, there's no real formula, as the brother Paris Tune was saying before, when there's no real formula to it, I mean, you know, what you get is authentic, and that's that. And, again, I want to thank each and every one of you for taking the time out to listen tonight. Again, if you are listening through the archives, I invite you to tune in live each and every Friday, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on the Flavor News Radio Network and Soul City Radio, doing this thing together. Give a shout-out to Lady Flavor, who affords me the opportunity to do this show each and every Friday. I thank you from the bottom of my heart, Mama, and I got love for you always. And on that note, we're going to get out of here. And just tune in. Oh, before I go, next week my guest will be Gloria Rianne. You definitely don't want to miss that interview, so make sure you are here, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, next Friday. We're going to do this all again. And I will be leaving you with this. Peace.
I wanna show you my name. let you the edge of all time.